a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Good morning. This is the Democratic Press Leadership Press Conference. Speaking for the Democrats today will be House Minority Leader Spence Hawley of Brookings and Senate Minority Leader Billy Sutton of Burke. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here with you today to visit and answer any questions that you might have about what's going on out here in Pierre. Just to open it up with, as we mentioned before, what we'd like to do is kind of focus on a topic for you, which today we'd like to visit about Medicaid expansion, and then we're going to leave time for question and answers on that or anything else that you might have. As you know, for the last 3 years, we've been pushing very hard out here from the Democrat side to do the Medicaid expansion program that came with the Health Care Reform Act. And we've presented several bills over the past sessions to get that accomplished, trying to get the other side to agree that this is what we need to be doing and what most of South Dakotans wish would happen. Currently, there are discussions going on out here, bipartisan, and with the medical providers on Medicaid expansion, and hopefully something will come out of that before the end of session. We're optimistic that will happen, and obviously, as the minority role, we aren't in the position that we are able to push that to make sure it does happen. So we're providing a supportive role and the input that we can on it. You know, it's a area that would affect 48,000 South Dakotans, and more specifically, the 26,000 South Dakotans who are below the 100% of federal poverty level. As you know, if you're currently on the ACA, the Health Care Reform Act, if you're above 100% to 400% of the federal poverty level, you can apply in the health insurance exchange to get coverage and with a subsidy to make it affordable. I have an insurance agency. One of the products we sell is health insurance, and I have helped several people apply online for the health insurance exchange. And just to give you one example, a year ago, when this first opened up, I had a mother, has three children. I had health insurance for her. She had to drop it. She simply couldn't afford it. So she was without insurance for a year. And I kept saying, well, this open enrollment's going to open up. You'll be able to get a subsidy, and we'll be good then. I think we can get you some coverage. Because she has some health issues, and she wanted to get treatment. There was no way she could have the surgery. So I... about the first of the enrollments, I called her up and said, it's available, come on in. So we came in, she sat down on the computer, and we inputted all her information, we put her family information, we put her income in. She was making about $23,000, and then you push the button, and then it comes back with how much your subsidy is going to be, and then you go apply from there. Well, we pushed the button, and there was no subsidy. And I'm looking at this, and I'm trying to figure out, well, what's going on? And I looked at it. And then it dawned on me, she fell below the 100% of federal poverty level. Her income was $23,000. She was working two jobs to get to that level, but she had three kids. So she needed to have an income of $23,500, I believe was what the number was on that for. And I said, well, you don't qualify. She said, well, what's that mean? I said, you can't get this, and you don't qualify for Medicaid because the state hasn't expanded. She broke down crying right in the office. And I agreed with her. I mean, it isn't right. We have this segment of our population that isn't able to get insurance, or if they can, they literally cannot afford it. And that's what we're talking about. Now, to get to that level, we have to expand 138%. Last year, there was a move by the governor to go up to 100%, and we'd be good, and they didn't accept that. Right now, to get Medicaid, there's four groups that can get Medicaid. If you have children in a family of an income below $200,000, which like a family of three is about $38,500 roughly, if you have that, then the child can get on the CHIPS program and get Medicaid. And that's the preponderance of our people in South Dakota on Medicaid are children. The second area is the disabled people qualify for Medicaid. Based on income. The elderly, our discussions in the past on the Medicaid and nursing homes, if you don't have any assets left and you've got $5,000, then the state will pay your Medicaid expenses in the nursing home. And then the other one is parents below 52% of the federal poverty level. If you have a single mother and she makes less than $6,000 a year, then she could qualify for Medicaid. If she makes $7,000 a year, she wouldn't qualify. This expansion, as I mentioned, will affect everybody up to the 138% of the federal poverty level, which on a single person means you make $15,500, which is still even below the minimum wage. The family of three means they're making $26,000. And that's who we're talking about. That group of people is what this expansion is for. You know, when it does expand, when we're fully expanded, if we were in it, at 2020, when we're paying our FMAP share, and I'm going to let Senator Sutton get into the details on that, and we're getting the federal government's total share, that brings in $350 million a year. Could you imagine if we had a bill for economic development that said that we were going to put $350 million a year into the South Dakota economy? How many people would vote against it? Nobody, if it was economic development. But because it's health care and expanding Medicaid and it's linked to the Health Care Reform Act, they think it's just terrible that we'd want to accept $350 million. So that's a problem. There's large support for it. The Argus Leader did a poll in 2014 that about 63% of South Dakota favor expanding Medicaid. Our health care providers, the big three, Avera, Sanford, Rapid City Regional, they support the expansion. The Nurses Association, American Cancer Society, AARP, I could go down a list of entities that say that we want. So the people that are going to apply the expansion want it. South Dakotans want it. The only people that don't want it are in Pierre. So we need to work on that. I'm going to turn it over to Senator Sutton for some more details.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Representative. Billy Sutton, District 21, Senate Minority Leader. I think Spence did a very good job kind of laying out some of the details of expansion, but I think one thing that we need to talk about a little further are the demographics of this expansion population. I was on the governor's work group about a year and a half ago, I suppose, to discuss Medicaid expansion challenges and opportunities. And that work group determined who this population is that we're talking about. The expansion population is young. 61% of those up to 138% of poverty are between the ages of 18 and 34. I think it's also important to note, you know, when we talk about Medicaid, a lot of folks think that we're just giving a handout, these people aren't working, and you know, they don't want to work for it. Well, that's actually not true either. 54% of this population are working. And of those 54%, 57% of them are employed full-time. So that gives you a little bit of background of who this population is that we're talking about, a lot of young individuals. I also want to discuss a little bit about, you know, the human impact of Medicaid expansion. The New England Journal of Medicine had a report that said that one out of every 176 individuals who get access to health coverage, it saves one out of every 176. So in our situation, if we're talking about a number of 48,500 South Dakotans, that's 272 lives that we could essentially save by expanding Medicaid. So there's a very real and very serious human impact along with this discussion. You know, one of the frustrating things when we talk about Medicaid expansion is that it'll cost the state, you know, way too much money. And it's a legitimate discussion to have because it would cost our state around $100 million up through 2020. The first 3 years of expansion, all it costs the state is the administrative cost, and that averages about $1.5 million. And so we've missed the first year of that. So now we're in the second year of potentially having 100% covered by the federal government. But as we get closer to 2020, that gets ratcheted down. So our maximum cost to the state would be 10% moving forward from 2020 on. And so I think that's something that we've monitored very closely. So our cost does go up, but our total cost through 2020 is still right at around $100 million. But we would receive over $2 billion from the federal government. $2 billion. And the factor that is very important in this is that, that the economic impact of that $2 billion would actually make our state money after we pay for Medicaid expansion. There's a study done by two professors out of the University of Nebraska, and it stated that we would gain $64 million over the next 7 years if we expanded Medicaid in South Dakota. That's after Medicaid expansion is paid for. Our general fund would receive about $9 million more per year if we expanded Medicaid in South Dakota. So I believe that that cost discussion is somewhat mitigated by that study. It's also important to note that there's always discussions that the federal government won't come through with those dollars. Well, I believe that we also have an easy fix for that. In the legislation that you would write, you would put what's called a circuit breaker on in law, that if the federal government didn't come through with what they said they were going to come through with, then we would remove ourselves from Medicaid expansion. I think that's a very reasonable thing. I think that's something that we'd have to have as part of the conversation in order to move forward. You know, the thing that is another factor in this, when we talk about the federal government, all the federal spending, I don't think the general public sometimes doesn't hear about our budget and how much dollars we receive from the federal government. Our budget is about $4.2 billion. That includes state dollars, federal dollars, and other revenues. We receive 39% of our state budget from the federal government already. So if the argument is that we don't want to accept those federal dollars for Medicaid expansion, then maybe we should have the discussion about sending the federal dollars that we receive back to Washington. You know, as Spence said, I think it's pretty clear that the majority of South Dakotans want this. 63% of South Dakotans want Medicaid expansion. Here's the problem. If we don't expand Medicaid, we're still going to keep paying for it. We're paying through it for it through taxes for the ACA. We're paying for it through increased premiums at the when we go, you know, pay for our health care. Because what happens is an individual that doesn't have coverage and they have an accident or they need to go to the emergency room and they don't have money to pay for it, it goes as uncompensated care or charity care. The hospitals right now in South Dakota are paying about $100 million per year in uncompensated and charity care right now. And so they have to make up that cost somewhere, and that means increased premiums for the rest of us. So we're already paying for it. Not only that, but these individuals are going into the hospital for the wrong place, the wrong cost, and the wrong time. It is not the healthcare system that we need to see. We need to see those people before it gets bad enough that they need to go to the emergency room. So it's a fundamental change. But you know what? I am hopeful. We have had some good discussions here already. I know there are a lot of discussions about Medicaid expansion going on up here in Pierre, and I am very hopeful that we can move forward and get it done this year. So with that, I'll let Spence have a follow-up. A
quick comment about the expenses, and Senator Sutton touched on it. When the Health Care Reform Act, Obamacare, some referred to it, the ACA, when it came out, the health insurance reform and Medicaid expansion were all part of the same bill, and it was going to happen everywhere. And the entire design of the bill and the funding of the bill was under that assumption. As we know, the Supreme Court made a ruling on the North Carolina that the Medicaid expansion is an option that each state has to decide. So they thought it was going to stop the Health Care Reform Act totally, and it didn't. So the normal Health Care Reform Act went into place. The normal charges that are going on back to South Dakota stayed, but now we have the option to come in. What that meant, if you have an individual policy, there's a $5 fee coming off your policy every month sent to DC to pay for this. If you have a group policy, every one of your employees, you're paying a fee every month for this. It's going to DC and it's being distributed. If you're at that a doctor, a provider, if the health organization, you're going to see a reduced payment plan on the Medicaid because that was one of the options that they were using to pay for this. The pharmacies have an increased payment. surgical instruments and equipment have an additional fees. All those are still in place. So when we send our South Dakota dollars in, none of those are coming back. You know, we're kind of used to two for one. If we send a buck in, they'll send us two back. Well, this one we're sending in and not getting anything back on it. And it just isn't right. I mean, people need to realize that what the impact is on those people out there. And when you have them come in your office and you sit across the table and you see somebody that says, I really need a surgery, this is going to improve my quality of life, possibly extend my life, I can't afford it because I can't afford the insurance to do it. Something's wrong with our system. I guess we're going to open it up to questions. Again, we focused on this. There are several other extremely important issues going on in South Dakota and the legislature right now, and we're willing to answer any questions on those you might have also. Thank you.
Jackie Severn with Public Radio. I asked Representative Gosh about this too. This is getting a little bit away from Medicaid, but would you mind going over the Watershed Task Force stuff and what's going on with that right now?
Yeah, let me handle that. I've been on that task force for 3 years now. This discussion started 3 years ago when the counties came up here and several of the counties were getting rid of their statutes or their code on drainage and tiling specifically at that time. Now, Brookings County was one of those. They said there's too much liability there. We don't have the expertise, so we don't want anything to do with it. And we had the discussion out here what to do. So 3 years ago, the task force was created, legislative, non-legislative members. And I'll be wrong in this. Representative Gosch would have been better. I think it was about 14 people in the task force. And we've been having hearings all over the state, mostly eastern South Dakota, the last 3 years, drafted a bill, Senate Bill 2. Senate Bill 2 takes and reestablishes water management under the nine river basin areas. The Sioux River would be managed as a Sioux River water basin. The James River Valley, the Vermilion River, and there's nine of those. There's actually 11 of them in South Dakota, but we combined a couple of the smaller ones in to get nine. And that's what the initial part of the bill does. It establishes those districts, establishes the borders across county lines. We did it by section level and not by county level. And that came about from the discussion in our hearings is that water doesn't stop at the county line. Water stops when it gets out of the basin. And we had people from North Dakota, Minnesota, Nebraska, Iowa come in, and they've all changed their water management to a basin management level. And we were kind of one of the few in this area doing it at a county level. So that's what the bill does. It then went on to establish a oversight committee, which the oversight committee would work with the next year to 2 years drafting. They are to develop water management plans for their basin and how they're going to govern and all that, and that oversight committee would help in that development. The current bill, SB2, then went and it gives them 30 mil taxation ability on it. The current bill, and there's people said, well, in the Sioux River Basin, that's going to generate $12 million a year. What are they going to do with it? Well, that wasn't the issue. The issue was the Belle Fouche District needed 30 mils to generate $300,000. That's the most they could generate, and that's what we kind of use it off of that. It included municipalities in it with a discussion that what happens in Sioux Falls or Brookings or Aberdeen has an impact, the water flowing into it and out of it was the discussion. And then we set up boards. We went into the boards. Well, there's been a big backlash, okay? Probably the number one backlash right now is the people don't think that they need 30 mils. The second backlash is that when we did this bill, we established a date that the districts would take over management from the counties, and the counties would be out of water management, period. And there's some backlash from the counties. Some counties. Half the counties went out of it. There's a couple that, or a few, I shouldn't say a couple, a few that still want it. So there's discussion right now that we need to proceed with doing the districts, at least establishing those, establishing the oversight committee, and then maybe go and do a initial water management plan as an initial example, using one of the basins, and that would take people's fear away what this really does and how it's going to function. I'm extremely hopeful that that can happen and that we can get that through the Senate and come to the House and pass it. At least it would acknowledge that we need the water management as it flows and not when it stops. The other big eye-opener I learned is that you've heard it before, but whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting, and that's an extremely true answer, trust me.
Can you talk a little bit about the need for this? I know there's a lot of water in northeastern South Dakota that...
Yeah, you're a little dry out there. You don't have to worry about that. As we know, we've had several issues out there with water in northeastern South Dakota. We got different types of basins. We got the closed basin of Wabe that there's no drainage out of it, and that just keeps filling up. And they want some kind of way to maybe they should drain it out of there or do something like that. So that's a possible discussion that a district could do. To the other hand, you've got the James River Valley through Aberdeen and south. That it is so flat. It has, as we all know, it has the lowest drop in its 200 miles of any river in the United States. It just doesn't go anywhere. It flows, but not very fast. And so when they get water in there, which we've had the last few years, we're in a very wet cycle, they got huge problems there. Up to the pothole range region, where it's been so wet that in order to improve production, tiling has come in. And they're able to make their land more productive. And the question is, what's that doing to the water quality? What's it doing to the rest of the drainage downstream? You get down to Yankton and Vermilion, that's kind of where it ends up at. And what they're deciding up above has an impact below. So that's kind of the reason behind it. And the main reason was a lot of the counties were getting out of the business. They said, we don't want to do this because we don't know what we're doing.
I heard a couple callers hop on the line. Are there any other questions, or what questions do you have?
Tom Peer, KVHT, Yankton. Question for either representative or senator. But going back to the story that Representative Howley talked about with the woman looking for insurance, have you heard any? Either of you heard any indications that some South Dakotans might opt for not taking insurance and just choosing the penalty since it's the cheaper option? Is there any word of an estimate of how many people might do that?
This is Representative Hawley. I haven't seen a number. All I can do is give you a personal experience. And I have some young people come in. One of the effects of the Affordable Care Act is that the banding that we can have is only a 1 to 5. From the younger age to the very old age, there's a gap of what you can have in premium difference. The net effect of that was it raised the premiums for younger people. Younger healthy people could buy insurance, and it was more expensive. That's why the Affordable Care Act gives them a catastrophic coverage for under age 30. You can buy a high deductible plan for under age 30 to make it cheaper for them. But those are probably the group of people that that I see that are saying, "Well, I can afford the $95 this year, 1%. It's going to go up next year, and up to 2.5% eventually." You know, I had one individual I've been writing his insurance for 20 years, and extremely anti-Obamacare, Health Care Reform Act. And he came into the office, 63 years old, and he says, "I've been reading this stuff and about Obamacare, and I want to know what's going on." He says, "This is just terrible what they're doing. I can't believe that the government is doing this and making people buy it." And I said, "Well, what do you got going?" So we sat down, we went online, put his data in. He's divorced, so he's just himself now. And I said, "Do you know that we can save you $350 a month on your insurance if you go online in the exchange and do this with a subsidy?" He said, "I can." He said, "No, this is the best thing that ever happened." He says, "I can't believe this stuff. This is great." So it depends where you're at on it. There is a group of people that are just against it because it's under the ACA. And I understand that argument. You know, don't let the government do it. We'll do our own thing. And there's that belief out there. But the impact that it can have for South Dakotans is so large that we need to get past that thought. And we need to expand our horizons and realize there's some things good that can come out.
Yeah, and I would just add that I couldn't agree more. This should not be about politics. This should be about what's best for the people of South Dakota. The people we're talking about here are the poorest of the poor. Below 100% of poverty. I challenge anyone here to try making around $10,000 or $11,000 a year and go out and try to purchase private insurance without any subsidy or any other options. It's just not going to happen. On a related note, one thing we didn't mention earlier, the regional director for HHS, Kim Gillen, is going to be here next Wednesday to meet with some legislators and leadership, and hopefully with the governor's office as well, to have some discussions about Medicaid expansion. And I think that's a positive sign, and we're glad that she's going to be able to be here next Wednesday. So.
There's still some time, some more time for questions.
Yes. Yeah.
Jackie Severin with Public Radio again. Can you talk a little bit about the proposals that might be coming out to expand Medicaid? Are you going to go for trying to go to cover the whole 138%? I think of the poverty level, or change that, or what?
Yeah, we've had discussions even last year of going just to 100%, but that's not going to happen. That's not how the law was written. We've talked to HHS and the feds, and they made that very clear that that's not going to be an option. A lot of other states have already expanded to 138%, so they can't really give a waiver for somebody to expand to 100 when they've already allowed people to expand to 138. Not only that, but the reality is it's more expensive for the feds to provide the subsidies than it is to pay for Medicaid. And so they want states to do the full expansion, and that's how it's written as well. As far as the other plans that are out there, I don't think we can give too much in details at this time, but I assure you there are a lot of discussions going between the hospital groups and the administration and the legislature of trying to figure out a solution that mitigates the state's concern for the state cost and figuring out potential other ways to pay for it. And those discussions will be more forthcoming as we move along in the process.
And I might add, there, you know, a couple of the thoughts is that there needs to be co-pays larger they need to pay a little bit larger share if they get the Medicaid expansion. And those have been getting approved in other states as long as they go to the 138%. That's kind of what the hard line has been. We tried the 100% last year. And we're supportive of that, too. I've got no problem with that. Yeah, actually, when I visit with the hospitals, I said, well, what do you think if we enlarge the copay, you know, and make them a higher copayment when they come in for each service? And they said it really doesn't make any difference because most of our Medicaid now, the copay gets waived because they can't pay it anyhow. So if you make it a higher amount, we're just going to be picking up a little bit more. So I don't see that as a major showstopper out there.
And we're also supportive of some states have gotten waivers for some health incentives along with that. If you show that you're trying to have a healthy lifestyle, you can maybe not have to pay some of those co-pays. I think the Iowa model had some discussions about that. And so we're supportive of those kind of things. I think that you'll find we're pretty much supportive of about anything as long as it's Medicaid expansion. And so we hope to further those conversations.
We good?
Well, it's about 10:30, so...
Would you guys like to have some closing remarks?
Yeah, just a real quick comment. We're kind of starting. The last bills are going to be introduced. They're getting dropped today. to be drafted, and next week will be our last day we can put bills in, the middle of the week. And so we're kind of see what's on the plate. There's some great bills out there that are really going to help, and a lot of benefit to South Dakota. Some bills we need to talk a little bit more about. But there's some good things going on in Pierre. And we aren't focused on one topic that we try to focus on each time here, but there's a lot of good bills going on. And so please call if you have some concerns and you're reading the bill and you don't know what it is, or you're concerned about our positions. I think we're all open-minded for input.
Yeah, I would just echo that. I look forward, as the session goes on, to a lot of good discussion and dialogue. And it's very important for both sides of the aisle to reach across in bipartisan manners, and that's one thing that I think South Dakota has done a good job of for a long time, and I hope we can continue that with some of these, you know, really big issues. We do it a lot on smaller issues or stuff that doesn't come as much to the forefront, but I'm hopeful that we can do that with things like, you know, education and teacher pay and Medicaid expansion, some of the big priority items for us as we move forward. So I appreciate the time, and thank you.
Thanks.
That's the conclusion of the Democratic Press Leadership Press Conference. We'll see you at 9:30 next week.